Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navarhitamastama Shavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So page 45. Bottom of 45. In other places, the following offenses are listed. A. To be against the scriptural injunctions of the Vedic literature, or to disrespect within one's heart the Srimad Bhagavatam, while externally falsely accepting its principles. Because the Vedic literature is coming from the Lord, so it's not different from the Lord. So there's no question of disrespecting it. Whether it applies to your situation, but it doesn't mean that it's disrespected. Like, let's say you have a manual for a machine. So it does different aspects. So depending upon what you are doing with that machine, then a different part of the manual will be dealing with that. So just because you're dealing with one aspect of the machine and therefore one aspect of the manual, that doesn't mean that the rest of the manual now is nonsense. Right? It's all bona fide, but it's just a matter of what applies to you and your situation. Does that make sense? So the Vedic literature as a body deals with everything related to the living entity, God, the material world, right? How to uplift yourself, how to come to the platform of perfection. That's what it's dealing with. So to disrespect the Vedic literatures is not proper, right? And then to against the scriptural injunctions, okay, we accept the philosophy, but not the injunctions of what we're supposed to do or not do or how we're supposed to do it. That also will not work. Right? Because then the problem is then we have a difficulty with endeavor. Right? The other is the sambandha, the scripture itself, and we accept the scripture, but we don't follow what it says, then that'll be a problem in Abhideya. Most likely because we don't understand how that connects to the goal. Right? We have a different idea of how the goal will be reached. So that means if we're not following the scriptural injunctions on how to reach the goal, then what are we doing? We're following our own injunction, right? And so in the conditioned state, that can be dangerous. Since in the conditioned state, all that one can come up with is karma jnana, right? So you can get yourself maximum liberated at best, and generally that's only if you follow scripture. And karma, you only get some material facility, but you only get that material facility which the Shastra says you'll get. So if you make up your own process, it's a good possibility you don't get anything, right? Like that. So it's not recommended, right? Or following the principles of Bhagavatam, but feeling that they don't quite match, or Prabhupada's purports aren't exactly right for this age, they're a bit archaic. These kind of things. That's this point. That's also an offense in deity worship, because our only connection to the deity and to the Lord is through the instructions, right, of the spiritual master, of the Vedic literatures, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So those are disrespected. Though we follow the rules, we socially do everything, but we don't actually believe in it, it's not going to work very good for us, right? Like that. This process has been worked out a long time ago. We have to understand this. Okay, once in a day of Brahma, in a day of Brahma, there are 1,000 Kali Yugas. Right? And so that means there's, what, 360,000 Kali Yugas in a year. Right? And then he is 50 years old, or 51. So that's a law, that's millions and millions of Kali Yugas. So you don't think the sages have worked it out by now? Right? In fact, the discussion came up because it's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is coming, right? And so, therefore, then they have an anxiety what to do for this age. And so that's just being discussed. That's actually the topic on the table. And we'll say, no, it's Kali Yuga, these things don't apply. Somehow or another, our great intelligence is so much better than Sutta and Shonaka and all the rishis that are there. And Vyasadeva, of course, you know, he really blew it because he wrote that conversation down rather than our one, right? You know, like that. You know, standing on the veranda, leaning on the railing there, you know, working out all the problems of the world, like that. He should have documented that one, right? Right? Even the bird got scared of that. You know, forget it, I'm out of here. What's this guy talking about? Right? Does that make sense? So we have to remember that these liberated persons are not confined by conditioning. So we'll say it doesn't work because of our conditioning. But in reality, no, the only thing that works is that which is given by those who are not conditioned, because they can see. Because for us, any disturbance, anything we don't like is wrong. Right? It's only with training that that which you think is wrong is actually right. Right? Does that make sense? You know? Just like, let's say, do kids like to exercise? No. You know, you get tired, it's hot, sweaty, it hurts. So that means you just have an unlimited barrage of reasons why one shouldn't do it. But someone who's trained understands the benefits. It may be a problem in the beginning, but after some weeks or months, it's not. So that's the difference between the instructions given by someone who is infallible and the instructions thought of by those who are fallible. Right? So Shastra is coming from Achyuta, who's infallible, and they're being discussed and presented and given to us, right, by those who are also infallible. In fact, the Bhagavatam then is a spotless Purana, and it says it's like it's been pre-digested. Right? You can't get better than that. You know? So all you have to do is swallow. It's already digested. You know? Like that. B, to introduce differing shastras, you know, like last time the Shaiva, different things and like that. So in other words, we don't introduce shastras. Shastras are introduced to us. Prabhupada has, we like to introduce variety of shastras, but the ones that Prabhupada recommended, those we're not so interested in. Like if you ask most devotees about Manusamhita, immediately there's nothing good to say about it. The Prabhupada right in the Gita is saying Manusamhita. Throughout Bhagavad purports, Manusamhita. That's the standard. It's the standard cultural understanding. But you see it through the eyes of Bhagavatam. Like that. So you don't introduce other things, right? Like that. Especially, and this means also then, because Shastra means something is Veda. Veda means actual knowledge. Knowledge that works. So if we're presenting some modern book, you know, and then saying it works, that means what we're saying is that this has an element of Veda to it. So why introduce that book when we already have books? Right? I guarantee devotees can quote from various success acharyas in the world, modern. But I can guarantee that not one of those persons who can quote that can say anything from Chanakya. So he's the authority in India. So this is what it means. You can take things. You come across something, you take it. You find gold in a dirty place, you take it. Right? It's not that the gold is sitting there on the path. Oh, it's dirty. You know, can't pick it up. Right? No. You take it. But the point is the only reason it works is because of its underlying elements that are connected to God's laws. You see that, then you get the spiritual benefit. You don't, then it'll be much harder to connect it. Because then you're working with renunciation, that only at the end, how much you connect that whole work to Krishna, that, there you get the benefit. While the other, if you see it connected to Krishna, then all during the whole work, you're getting the benefit. See, to Tu Chupan and Betel before the deity. Right? Because, you know, they're not, the mouth is not considered clean. That's what happened with why Draupadi was born from the fire instead of, you know, her mother, is that mother was chewing pan. And so then, you know, the yajnas go on forever, so they're just sitting there and all that. And then when it says, okay, now they're, you know, the souls are ready, where's the queen? Oh, I got to go wash. And their point is well, they're not going to wait, you know. So then the king, well, what can you do it some other way or like that? Okay, then they just threw the oblation and brought them out of the fire. But that's the point. They were chewing pan. So therefore, you can't be involved in ritual if you're chewing pan. Right? Pan, betel nut, same difference. Okay, we looked at, to keep flowers for worship on the leaf of castor oil. To worship the deity in the afternoon when he's resting. To sit on the altar, sit on the floor, worship the deity without a seat, because the seat represents Bhumi, and that's who you're sitting on, so that's her part in the puja. Otherwise, she's just the floor. You know, she has to be a little bit more represented than that, so that's why there's the asan shuddhi, worship of the asan, and that, when it gets technical. To touch the deity with the left hand while bathing the deity. To worship the deity with a stale or used flower, to spit while worshiping, right? You know, that would be generally pretty obvious, yes.
Regarding pan, chewing pan, is it forbidden to taste the Mahaprasadam betel pan?
Generally, we don't take the betel. The pan's not the problem. See, the pan leaf and all the spices aren't the difficulty. The difficulty is the betel nut itself, or if they use lime. The lime with some of the other things also, with the leaf, then also creates a bit of an intoxicating element. So it's the nut and the lime. You know, the white stuff. Like that. The red stuff, the other spices, that's not the problem. Because the betel leaf is actually very good for digestion. So some Ayurvedic medicines, you take it with betel leaf juice. You know, as the catalyst. So it's the nut and that generally just, especially if it's in India, there's always someone you can give it to. Like, there's not a problem with that. But all the other spices, this, that, or, you know, if you take out the betel nut, then it's fine.
To advertise one's glory while worshiping the deity.
You know, so it's like the spitting. You know, you're doing the puja. It means if you're in this kind of environment, in the West, it's not so much of a thing. It's not, but, you know, you're worshiping, you get up, go spit, come back, sit down, like that, you know, like that. Point is that, you know, ashraman has to be done, all these things. So it's like going to the bathroom. So all the things that you would have to work out. Why would you have to spit, right? There's nothing bad smelling in the deity room, so there's no cause there. So then it's either just a habit, you like to spit, you know, or does that make sense? Or you're talking stuff you shouldn't be talking and it makes you nauseous, you know, something. So all those have already been covered in previous rules, right? So no spitting. Okay. To advertise one's glories while worshiping the deity. So you shouldn't be talking about what great service you did and that and telling the other pujaris. It's kind of a little... supposed to glorify the Lord like that. To apply tilak to one's forehead in a curved way, right? Should be straight. Like that. You know. So it's, yeah. V vibhuti. It could that, but also it just means you don't are not paying attention and just putting it on and don't really worry. But that's where Krishna stays, so you want to make a nice place. So it's either considered the lotus feet of the Lord, so they're not all curved, or it's a temple, right? So unless you're, you know, representing, you know, Byzantine columns or something, you know, then it wouldn't work, right? Sorry? Well, that's straight, but leaning, you know, so that might happen, but, you know. Yeah. In other words, you pay attention and do nicely. L, to enter the temple without having washed one's feet. Because outside is unclean. You don't know what's there on the road. You know, so then. M, to offer the deity food cooked by an uninitiated person, because you can't guarantee what their consciousness is. Like that. And to worship the deity and offer bhoga to the deity within the vision of an uninitiated person or non-Vaishnava. So, that, you know, your proper worship and all that, that's always closed like that. Sometimes special festivals, something will go on, but generally you put up a cloth. That's the standard. You're going to do the offering, you put up a cloth, and you do all the puja and all that. Because if someone doesn't know how to interact, you can't be comfortable accepting interaction or food, right? Does that make sense? You know, if you're sitting there to eat and the other person is looking at you and looking at your food and, you know, stuff like that, you're not going to be happy, right? Yeah. You know, it's not going to work. So the same is for the Lord. You know what I'm saying? So someone who knows, just like someone who's serving prasad, who knows that you're not uncomfortable with them there. Right? They look at your plate, you don't feel bad because they're looking at your plate to figure out what's not there. Right? You know. But someone who isn't trained, he's looking to see what is there. You know, so that's the difference. Yeah. Yeah.
The previous point was the first initiation or second initiation?
Referring back to the Panchasamskar, then what would we be talking about?
Second.
Yes. Like that. But, you know, how you say, previously you didn't have first and second, you only had second. So in other words, the technical means, if you have up the curtain and there's second initiated devotees back there doing services, that's not a problem. But you wouldn't have, let's say, a first back there, unless it's something that they're so busy with it doesn't matter. If they're standing around watching, that shouldn't be happening. Right? But it specifically means those who are neither first or second. Right? Now, if you're dealing with the picture, that's the worship. Then it means anyone below first. So first and above are qualified. Is that the same? The idea is that it's not a rule. Oh, well, why do we care? It's preaching. No, it's a matter of Krishna as a person. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Temple president, oh, it's preaching. We don't care for these rules. So then would the president be really comfortable? Oh, not even really comfortable. Anything comfortable. If I happen to show up at his door, knock on his door, as soon as he opens the door, he'd say, "Hi, Prabhu." And I walk in and I herd in a whole bunch of guests, outside people, first time visiting. You know, like that, and some Indians and their family and some other people. He's never seen them before. You know, and you just walk in, and you start pointing out, yes, this is, you know, devotees, we live like this, this is the modern age. So, you know, you try to combine the things, and following the Vedic rituals and this, and take them around and show them the whole house and stuff like that. And the president would be comfortable, right? And he'd say, "It's preaching, Prabhu." And he'd go, "Oh, right, yeah, cool. You know, when's the next tour coming through?" Right? Isn't it? I guarantee you there's not one person who says these things about not following the rule for the deities that would be comfortable with that. So somehow their own personal life, it's their personal space. But somehow the deities, no, that's just, you know, anybody's to make any comment, to make any rule, create any religion. Right? You understand? The point is, he's a person. We're just seeing rules because rules get things done. We see rules as karma. That's the problem. We don't see rules as relationship. That's the weakness in modern culture. Rules generate economics. People will follow very strict rules if it's to do with economics. Right? If you have to be there at 9 o'clock, otherwise you don't get paid, everybody will be there. You know, you got to be there 5 days a week, and you only get 2 days a week, two weeks in a year, you know, of paid vacation. And after that, then you can have so many weeks where it's not paid and you're off like that. You get sick leave this many days. That's it. No one will argue. They'll come and try, you know, this is that, and kid was sick, and, you know, thought about that, so you need a few more days, and you have to go in and that. But if it comes to the temple, it's just that you don't show up and to do your service. Why not? Oh, I had to take my kid to the dentist. You know, that happened suddenly, just his teeth fell out and all. No, we knew for the last month, but, you know, they forgot to tell. It's no big deal, and, you know, it's right. Because it's devotional service. It's not economic. You understand? So therefore, it has nothing. So if it's not economic, it doesn't have any meaning. So if it'll get you power, position, or money, then rules are important. But if it doesn't, hey, who cares? Because if it's a relationship, it's one plus one, right? Number one, myself, plus one. That's a relationship in the modern. But the Vedic is no. You have that thing of equally sharing in the responsibility of the relationship. Therefore, there's rules that make it work. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's the impersonalism of the non-Vedic cultures that creates so much problem in relationships. So therefore, then the rules are there because he's a person. Everything here is not that. Oh, this is fanatic. These are just things that the Lord doesn't like. That's why it's an offense. If it didn't matter, it wouldn't be here, right? This is Pancharatra. Now there's a lot more stuff for the Karmakandas, right? You pick up a pot of prasad with one hand, it's an offense. You sniff it, it's an offense. You shake it, it's an offense. You know, offense meaning not just reaction, means you won't get any benefit from it. You know, you pick it up with one hand, the paisachas take the results. You shake it, the rakshasas take the results. You sniff it, someone else takes the results. So you can go through the whole ritual, you get nothing out of it. That's why Prabhupada says he's karmakanda. One syllable said wrong, the whole thing is useless. Right? Pancharatra, you do one thing wrong, the rest of it's useful. That part's got a problem. But in the karmakanda, you do one thing wrong, you get nothing. Yes?
These strict rules, is that because the people are more out of control, so they need to be restricted more?
No, it's just these are just standard relationship stuff. Right, I mean, it's like this. Just take like this. Now, let's just take your. It's mixed company, okay? Would they like it if you're speaking lies? No. What about if you're talking nonsense? No. What about if you're chastising someone? Right? That chastising has nothing to do with them. It's not that this person has wronged the lady, so you're chastising, so you're giving support. No, it's just in your own dealings, you're getting on this guy's case in front of the ladies. That would be okay? Right? What about using harsh words? No. What about blaspheming? Right? What about vulgar language? Right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah. So what does your wife, would your wife think of putting on your tilak crooked? You know, you can't go out. You look stupid. You just have to take any one of these rules. To avoid offering obeisance, when you could say, you know, notice your wife, and you don't. Is that okay? No. Okay. What about there's a prescribed festival, like a birthday or an anniversary? What if you don't follow that? Right? Doghouse, right? Okay. Okay.
Anniversary?
Of course. I mean, it's to do with the other person, the festival. Right? Okay. to that, you know, you're sitting there brushing your teeth and telling her how great she looks. Could you do that? No. So offer prayers in an unclean state. Not having washed one's hand out after eating. You just kind of like eat and then wipe your hands off and wipe them on. They'd be cool, right? Okay. How you say? You're supposed to do something for them that requires two hands, but you just use one hand. You know, hey, can you hand me that? And you just, yeah, here. You know, is that okay? No. Okay. To respect someone else. There's another lady there, and you're saying, oh, how great she's doing and everything in front of your wife. Right? Cool? Okay. Okay. To sit there, you know, with your legs spread out and just hanging out there in front of the ladies and all that. Cool? No. Okay. Okay. Let's see. You know, she's sitting there nicely and you're just kind of laying down. You know, same kind of thing, right? To eat, you know, she's sitting there and that you just bring in some to eat, start sitting down there and start eating. Cool? Didn't offer her anything. No, okay. Speak lies, you already address someone loudly before the deity, right? You know, she's sitting there talking to friends. Hey, it's not gonna work. To cry before the deity, right? You know, if it's nothing to do with her, it's like, you know, hey, get it together. Be a man, you know, so. Okay. You're wearing an old, you know, you found in the garage an old, you know, an old jacket and that. You really loved it back in high school, but it's really stinky, right? You know, you can put that on and wear it around. Hey, check this out, you know. She's going to like it, right? No, okay. You understand? So we could go through each, you know, there's nice new things that are there in the market and everything, but you don't get her any. Everybody else has got, you know, they're telling her, wow, the mangoes are so great this season. She said, they're in season, you know, like that. So what happens when she gets home? You're in trouble. Right. Yeah. So you understand, they're just to do with relation. We take them as rules. Oh, all these rules. We just chant Hare Krishna. Great. You just try chanting Hare Krishna and not following any rules with your family. You know? You said you'd be home at 6. Oh, well, we chant Hare Krishna. We don't care about rules. You know? Would it work? No, because we're seeing rules as economics, and we don't see how we're getting any profit from this rule. That's all. So that's niyamagraha, meaning we're not informed enough to understand how we benefit. So we throw it out, right? Or the person who follows it and think it's the rule that gives us the benefit, right? It's not the rule that gives you the benefit. The rule is the meaning to express, right? So either both of them have missed the point. Because both of them think, the rule itself is getting me something, I follow it. The rule doesn't get me anything, I don't follow it. So both of them, it's karma. Right? So that's the difficulty. Okay, so.
You mentioned that not following those rules, or one of them, you will not get the benefit.
That's if you're following karma. I was saying that we think this is strict. This is not strict.
No, but before that, you mentioned that if you don't follow one rule, so you don't get benefit of that specific rule.
Yeah, of the specific point. It means if you know, everything else you do nice, you're clean, you've done everything right, but your tilak's crooked, you'll get benefit for everything else, but not for your crooked tilak. But if it was karma conduct, the tilak's crooked, you won't get benefit for anything.
Sometimes it's mentioned not only that we don't get benefit for not following that rule, but also there are some reactions.
Well, that's why this is a list of offenses.
Yeah, but there are not mentioned those reactions in detail.
Probably because it wouldn't do you good to know.
What if I know?
Huh?
What if I know?
Well, if you know, if you apply it to yourself, great. But when you start applying it to others, then you just make offense. So that's why it's not mentioned. You want to know the reaction to some of these things, then look in the last chapter of Manu. It'll tell you. You understand? But then the point is then we'll start going, oh, his nails are black. He did this in his last life. Or they're like this, and his teeth are crooked, so that he did that. And that's what we'll do with it. We won't look at it and go, well, I've got these defects, so therefore I have to work on those anarthas, be very specific about those, because I must be so habituated I won't even notice those. That's how you should use it. You understand? but it won't be used. So there's no, the point is it makes a deity not happy. So isn't that bad enough?
Yes.
How's that for a reaction?
It's primary reaction.
Yes, yeah, so that's what we worry about. The other ones, physical, the mano gives a rule. Physical offenses give physical reactions, right? Mental gives mental, intellectual gives, means with the senses, gives sensual. Right? You speak badly and then you won't be able to speak properly in the future. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like a high sound. Yeah, it just gets worse. You know. Okay? To offer worship to the deity without worshiping Vaikuntha deities like Ganesh. So in other words, they have to approach. The Lord is not approachable directly. You always have to approach through the spiritual master, through the Vaishnavas. Right? So it's like here. So Ganesh, Vishwakshena, when you're doing Vaikuntha worship, then they have to be worshipped. For us, then the spiritual master, previous acharyas, the devotees. That's why in the Artik, when you're going to offer Artik to Krishna, before that there's the preliminaries of worshipping, going through Guru and everybody else to get to Krishna. The Artik starts with the deity. Right? That's why you can, it works. And then when you're coming back down, then that is, that's the prashad, or that's the appreciation of their, your connection to the Lord through them. Does that make sense? Yes.
Why, in some cases, we see that Guru Rambana is going from right to left, whereas in Vida, that in Shri Acharya, she stands on Krishna's left, as subordinate. So normally, the subordinate is supposed to go on the left side.
What about Lalita? What about Lalita? She's on the other side. But she's also subordinate. You know what I'm saying? These kind of things where people, it would be, it's like, these kind of discussions come up, right? Means, because otherwise we wouldn't know about it unless someone brought it up. Right? These kind of discussions are for those who think it's the rules and the form that actually makes the devotional service. In other words, people who have made the mistake that pure devotional service has limbs. And they think by the performance, by the proper performance of my duty, the duty, that performance itself, that generates devotion. Right? Rather than Krishna's pleasure. So, it really doesn't matter. So if they set it up in that way, they worship in that way. And what does it matter? And for us, we do it the other. There's no difference. The point is you have to worship the Guru Parampara, and through them you can worship Krishna. That's all. Because it says also in the verse about Lord Chaitanya that sitting on his right. It's just a matter of when he says on the right, does that mean our right or the deity's right? Yes. No, but the point is this, where's Prahlad Maharaj sitting? You know, so sit wherever, like this, is that you just sit. Because the point is that left may be there, but it's a generic element also. Generic element. So, how would the pictures be? Let's say if they are followers of the 12 Gopals, right? They're in the line of Gopal Guru, and they worship the 12 Gopals. Now, where do you put the pictures? You know what I'm saying? So, the problem is they make this the difference. That's not the difference. Everything's the same. The difference is whether there's, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if there's a governing body. And the governing body is above everybody, including their guru and acharya. And if it's not, then they're not following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That's the difference between us and the Gaudiya Mat. If you want to know the real difference between us and the Gaudiya Mat, it's that one thing. Everything else, same philosophy, same practices, maybe a little dissuading that way, but you go to different temples, it's different anyway. You know what I'm saying? No. In ISKCON, it's always they start. If we're looking at the altar, they start on the left and they go to the right. And if anybody switched it around, that's because they saw it in the Gaudiya Mat and someone confused them and said, you have to do it this way, otherwise it's not bona fide. Because that's basically when the Gaudiya Mat talks to us, that's all they have to say, is some ritual or external form is wrong. Because when it comes to it, our preaching, our commitment to the instruction of the spiritual master, that's always been our outstanding feature. And the Gaudiya Mat has been weak on that since when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was alive. He said he left 10 years early because they're not very strict or serious about following his instructions and preaching. So they've had that problem since 1926. Right? So they're just interested in the external rules, who has what facility, who's in what position. That's why they won't use the GBC. Because that means there's somebody above their acharya. Go ahead, knock me out. Who in the Gaudiya Mat, there's anybody above their acharya? There isn't one Gaudiya Mat. Not one. So, therefore, what happened to the GBC? Prabhupada, as soon as there were some mature devotees, he immediately introduced it. That's the difference. Otherwise, philosophy and, you know, where one's trying to go, everything's the same. It's exactly the same. There's no difference. But so, when they want to bring these little things up, that is what we would call petty. You know, this is pettiness. You know, why not discuss Harikatha? Why discuss these? Oh, that's the, you know, they make it into a big thing, but that's the trick. It's just Indian guru tricks. That's all. They all use it. Like that. It's just the way they do. You point out some fault, confuse them, and then you come in as the shelter. That's what they all do. So it's just that's the way they've established it, and Prabhupada did it the other way. And so what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the discussion in where was it? Yeah, I think it was in Hungary. A question came up about deity worship, and they were in great anxiety about the total, absolute, contradictory methods of deity worship between what they were following in Hungary and what was going on in Moscow. Because some Russian devotees had come over and become pujaris there in Hungary. And went during the Artik, I can't remember who was who, but one of them, when they were ringing the bell, they kept their arms straight and rang the bell, while in their temple, they bent the elbow and rang the bell. And this was like totally freaking them out, you know, on the verge of, you know, blooping, because, you know, it's just such differences. It's just like tearing the movement apart. Right? Point is, ring the bell. You know what I'm saying? It should look good. You ring the bell and you don't look like an idiot, you know, like that. That's the point. You understand? So this is what they're trying to introduce. They're trying to introduce, it's like, you know, taking pot shots from the side, you know, corners and just harassing and stuff like that. It's not. It's like, you know, it's like, what do we care? Does that make sense? Because it has nothing to do with, you know, where you're standing there. Each of the gopis, if they define the yog pit, it's different. That didn't work. Yog pit means where Radha and Krishna and all the gopis and everybody are standing around in formal locations. But depending upon which gopi you're following, the yogpit order is different. So it's like, what's the problem with the pictures of this way or that way? You know what I'm saying? This is real, real, real neophyte stuff. They can turn it into a big this and that, but it's like everybody's going to be standing on that side. No one's going to stand on the other side. It says the gopis are standing all around. But that's a problem, because Radharani is on that side. So that means then, according to here, then Vishakha, Induleka, Rangadevi, Sudevi are fine. And, okay, Lalita can get away with it because she's 26 days older. So that means then Krishna's 2 weeks, but it still makes her older than him. And so then she can make all kinds of comments. But Champakalata, Suchitra, and Tungavidya, they got some serious, you know, philosophical issues here because they're standing on the wrong side. Right? And then in Radhakund, around Radhakund in the six season forest, when they go into the rainy season forest and they sit on that special swing where Radha and Krishna are in the middle, and then it's got eight lotus petals around it on the swing. It's a monster swing. And then each gopi sits in a lotus petal. They're all around, but they're not, there's only one gopi on Radharani's right, and everybody else is sitting in the wrong place, right? You understand? This is how juvenile this kind of point is. Because devotees won't even notice or care. Because we see it and they have it backwards. Hey, they got the pictures backwards. But it only comes to doubt when someone from the know is telling you, no, you're doing it backwards and this is the right. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarada, like that. Prabhupada established it this way. So what? And they say, well, Prabhupada didn't know deity worship. Most all of them don't know either. Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj knew deity worship. Keshavji, you know, his line, they also are quite good at it. That's it. None of the other ones know really much about deity worship. Does that make sense? I've even been told by them, they come up and say, no, you're supposed to do it like this. It doesn't say that in the book. Because they've read it, but they don't quite understand how to put it together. Does that make sense? So in other words, what comes from that side, don't even worry about it. I've never seen it. I've never seen a temple that is not from Krishna's right to the left. If it is backwards, it just means they don't know. Or someone's told them. Yeah, well, that means they just don't know, so it's backwards. So it's no big deal. But if they're doing it because they think it's right to do it that way, then that's not the... You know what I'm saying? It's not important. Yes?
About paying obeisances.
Paying obeisances.
Obeisances. In our situation, it's asked all the time. Devotees are asked to pay obeisances so that deities and gurus are on the left while paying the obeisances. Three. For example, Chitrafi Prabhu really asked.
No, the left is for deities, devatas. You know, I mean, it means the Lord, devatas, and the spiritual master after he's left. Otherwise, if the spiritual master is present on the planet, then it's right side towards the spiritual master.
Straight
can also be used. But it's right side to the spiritual master. See, these kind of questions, what's the purpose of asking the question? Are you an authority in that area where you can go back and correct it?
Just sometimes.
So the point is it's been said. Now you do with it what you want. This is not a forum for I got issues back in my zone and I want to get some authority how I can say what I want in the other way, or to create, you know, this one said this, now what does that one say, and then watch the fun. That's why I don't go to certain parts of the world, because that is the pastime. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, what are you going to do with this question? I've already said what the standard is. That's what Prabhupada said. That's the way it is. You want to do it different, someone else wants to do it different. Hey, what do I care? So it's been explained. Now what do you want to do with it? So you're trying to take this and emotionally churn something out of it. For what? The right side is the spiritual master if he's present. The left side is if he's not present. So that's why when devotees would come up and try to offer their obeisance with the left side to Prabhupada, when they come up for obeisance, is Brahmananda. You know Brahmananda? It's quite big. He'd physically have to turn them around. And Brahmacharya after Brahmacharya, they're all watching. But none of them ever think that I'm supposed to turn the other way. I guess they thought it was part of the ritual. I'll go this way. And Brahmananda will physically pick me up and turn me around. Okay, that's part of the process. Okay, you know, part of submission, you know, like that, you know. So I remember every initiation, that process had to go on because no one could catch it. You know, it's like, you know, it's just one thing. It's just a deep, no. The spiritual master is either straight on or right side if he's present. If he's already left, then it's left side, like the deity. That's why for Prabhupada, it's the left side. But if it's for present guru, you use right side. Okay? Because generally speaking, then, it would be when you offer obeisances, the deity's on the left, the guru's on the right. Right? So it works out. So it's only when, if the spiritual master's left, then you'll go and offer obeisance to him, then come around, and then to the deity. It's like when Prabhupada is present, you didn't have to do that. You just came in, crossed the temple, or, you know, whichever side the door was, and offered your obeisances with your left to the deity and right to Prabhupada. So it was one obeisance. Because then it was there. But after he left, then you went to Prabhupada, left, then went around to the deity. Okay? You know, so that's just how you arrange things. Like you do a yajna, yajna will be facing, so the hotri would be sitting with his left, the deity would be on his left, the spiritual master would be on the right. So it's just the normal pancharatric arrangement.
And what about the Vaikuntha deities or Goloka deities? In other words, demigods in Goloka and Vaikuntha.
What about them?
You started to explain last time, but somehow I interrupted you.
I see. So I didn't know if you can kickstart that conversation. I wouldn't have a clue what we were talking about. The point is you're approaching the spiritual master, and so that takes care of everything. You know, because Ganesha removes obstacles, but that's coming by the spiritual master. So one doesn't have to worry.
Are they there?
Are they? Who's this they? With the they. I've heard of the others, right? And that they're either on another island or they built a very large ice wall, right? And so then there's not a problem.
Demigods.
But demigods are here. Demigods in Golok. No, they do. They come down and then in the afternoon, then the Krishna is coming back from the fields, and on their way back, then at some point, because there's nothing going on, the demigods come and take advantage to offer prayers and everything like that. So the coward boys, because they're all, you know, been trained by their mothers how to behave in formal situations, so they're all behaving nicely. But once the demigods finish their prayers and leave,
Then they all start goofing and laughing and all that. Like, hey, did you see the guy with four heads? You know, like that. Yeah, what about the guy with 1,000 eyes all over his body? You know, like that. And, you know, they just go on like that. That makes sense? Because they're the source of the demigods. Right? Sridhama, Radharani's brother, his expansion is Garuda. Sudama, you know, Sudam becomes Hanuman. So everybody in Brajlila, they become all the demigods. You know, I've heard it said that the poetry of Brahma comes from Rupa Goswami. You know, so it means Rupa Manjari. That's the first of the Manjaris. So that's Brahma. Like that. So, but we're not worried about demigods. We respect them, but we're not worried about it.
P, to worship the deity while perspiring. Right? So in other words, you should take a bath or see that your arrangements are pot. Because if you're perspiring, that means it's too hot. So the deity would be too hot for the deity also. So you'd want to see that the arrangements are nice, so that would avoid that. You know, or at least that it's fresh perspiration that happened just during the worship, not before, right? Because the thing is before the worship, then it... The problem with perspiration is when it matures, right? So you want to avoid that.
Why are you looking at me?
Well, no, it's just a generic looking around the world. We were not... singling you out. Now you're starting to develop a complex here. Q, to refuse flowers offered to the deity. Right? In other words, some prasad comes, it's accepted. R, to take a vow or oath in the holy name of the Lord. So you don't take a vow like that. Because for us, it's not that we're doing it. We have a determination that we want to, you know, come to a particular standard, but it's not a vow that I'm going to do this, because we're not the doer anyway. It's by the Lord's grace that we can do something. Right? So we have to be very, very careful. That's why we don't, in front of the deity, take vows and stuff like that. You know? Okay, and so here comes the answer to the previous question. What happens if you do any of these things? If one commits any of the above offenses, one must read at least one chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is confirmed in the Skanda Purana, Avanti Kanda, right? So then by taking this course, you're doing pretty good. You don't have to worry. Similarly, there is another injunction stating that one who reads the 1,000 names of Vishnu can be released from all offenses. In the same Skanda Purana, Reva Kanda has said that one who recites prayers to Tulsi or sows a Tulsi tree is also freed from all offenses. Right? So, therefore, Prabhupada introduced Tulsi Puja twice a day. Right? You know, so you're reading Bhagavatam in the morning, evening, you know, Gita in the evening, so that's going on twice a day, Tulsi Puja twice a day. In the Brahmananda Purana, it said that one who worships Lord Vishnu, whose four hands bear a conch, disc, lotus flower, and club, can be relieved from the above offenses, right? So Nrisimhadev has all those. So then that also is worked into the program. In the Adi Varaha Purana, it said that a worshipper who has committed offenses may fast for one day at the holy place known as Shaukarava and then bathe in the Ganges. These are the options. Right? So 1,000 names of Vishnu also are there. But see, the point is that there's some understanding that something's been done and a desire to make an endeavor to correct it. Right? Because technically, 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Ram, three names of Ram, one name of Krishna. So just one Krishna in the mantra is worth 3,000 names. So one Hare Krishna mantra is worth, you know, tens of thousands of Vishnu Sahasranams. Right? So from that side it's already done. But the point is that one should be conscious to avoid committing the offenses. So you have to have that combination. Otherwise, you're getting purified. But if you don't realize you're doing something wrong, you will do it again out of habit. So if one's conscious, then one can break the habit. Right? You can only break a habit once you're conscious of it. Right? Otherwise, you won't. Right? They change the door and the doorknob is on the other side of the door. By habit, you'll come up and it's not there. So then, as you become aware of it, then you go, it's on the other side. And you'll do that a few times until, oh yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's when you're aware, that's when you start to change it. Does that make sense? Yes.
I'm making vows before these.
Making wells.
Vows.
Vows, okay.
And we still do that. And
we
is,
do that? Who's this we?
We.
He's got they problems, you have we problems. Or are you the they? Okay.
So we make vows while initiation.
That's a different thing. That's what you're going to fall here. This is some other element, because there is you're taking vows so that you'll take it seriously, because it is vows to the deity. But other than that, that's initiation. But here it's something else. We're talking about other things, other than that.
You said that we are not like doers. That's why we don't have.
Right.
So that means that if we don't have to vow to take vows besides of while we take initiation, we don't have to make any vows.
In front of the deities? No.
Not in front of this at all. Because we are not
can you make a difference between a vow in front of the deity and a vow not in front of the deity? It means, can you tell the difference in means just even, you know, spatially? You know, we're not talking some quantum thing here of, what's his name, Schroeder or whatever his name's cat, you know. You know, if you're in the front of the deity, but you're same time not in front of the deity, because if you're not thinking of the deity, you're not in front of the deity, though you're in front of the deity. No, we're not talking that. Can you make the distinction there? Right? The point is not to make vows in front of the deity, because the Lord is the source of your potency, so you don't make a vow there, because if you don't follow it, then you know you're not keeping your vow to the deity as such, right? But if in another situation you vow, yes, I want to, you know, Janmashtami, I want to chant 64 rounds and stuff like that. If you make it, great. If you don't make it, it's not a problem. But if you've taken that, said that in front of the deity, it's a problem. That's what we're discussing. The point of whether we're the doer or not, then that wasn't the discussion. That was a reference to 6 chapters or 12 chapters of Gita, you know, from that we were referring to. Does that make sense? In the process of worshipping the deity, is sometimes enjoined that one worship the deity within the mind. In the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda said, all persons can generally worship within the mind. The Gautamiya Tantra states, for a sannyasi who has no home, worship of the deity within the mind is recommended. Right? So within the regular worship, there's manasa puja. But it's also saying that anybody can worship within the mind. Like that. It means anybody. That can be done. So that's recommended, because then you can do all kinds of nice things for the deity. For sannyasi, also said he has no home, which, you know, they go together, but he doesn't worship the deity. If there's a place, then they can have a deity. You know, but the deity belongs to the place. So then, well, if he's there, he'll worship. But if he's not there, then they'll do worship in the mind. Right? In the Narada Pancharatra, it is stated by Lord Narayana that worship of the deity within the mind is called manasa puja. One can become free from the 4 miseries by this method. Sometimes worship from the mind can be independently executed. So he's saying within the puja, there is manasa puja. But he's saying independently means you're not doing you're not sitting down in front of the deity going to do worship. You can do manasa puja just like that. according to the instruction of Avyarhotra Muni, one of the Navi Yogendras, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one may worship the deity by chanting all the mantras. So one can therefore just go through all the puja, chant all the mantras, do a full puja like that. Because then you're saying in the puja and the manasa puja, it's not so important the mantras because you're going to do them all. So you've thought of the Lord, you've chanted the mantras. But in this case, if you're doing it independently from that, you can sit down, go through it, and within the mind, do everything, chant the mantras, and you'll get the same benefit as having performed the puja. Like that. So that way, yes. It means that's for your own sadhana. It doesn't mean you do that and then the deities worship. Means you would use it as part of the element of focusing in the, if you're doing the deity worship. It can be those things that you don't have or don't have nicely, those can be added within the Manasa Puja. But what it's saying here is that besides that, you can independently do Manasa Puja as your worship of the deity, not have deities, just worship the deities within the mind. And that can be, you know, something occasional, or that can be your regular puja. Like someone has their deities and every day they spend so much time that you could every day sit down and do Manasa Puja. Like that. Like that. It means Nectar Devotion gives the example of that one Brahmana. So that was his regular sadhana. He'd go and sit and do a full Manasa Puja. Like that. So it can be part of the sadhana. Like that. Manasa Puja means he has no deities.
No, if he has deities.
If he has deities and he just does it, no, then it has the offense of not offering, you know, items according to one's facility. Right? So it'll have that. If it's a matter of he can't, then within the mind he does. Because even if he has facility, how much facility does he have? You know, is the bathing thing, is it, you know, made of, you know, marble with inlaid with gold and jewels? No, he doesn't have that. So in this Manasa Puja, but he might have a very nice solid silver, you know, bathing thing. You know, so you can always improve like that. So that element's there. But here the first one was meaning that it's part of the process is sometimes enjoined that one worship the deity with the Manasa Puja. So it's recommended. But even if it's not done, it still works. Like if you're doing simple puja in the home, then if one doesn't do Manasa Puja, it's not a problem. But if one wants to do a little more, one can do it. It's not that if you don't do it, the puja doesn't work. You know, but something like you don't offer the 16 items, then that's not going to make the puja work very nicely. You know, but if Manasa Puja, that's improves it, but it's not that it's essential. Like that. But here also then he's saying that Avyarhotra Muni is saying that you could do that worship without having a deity. Right? That's so it's not a means of putting in some less effort. It's a matter of you're putting in effort because there are no deities. Because in actual proper Manasa Puja, there's effort. You have to sit down and really think of it. It can't just be, you know, like that. Yes. Yeah, if you do the full thing, go through, not just one of these 30-second Manasa Pujas and then feel good about yourself. You know, it means proper go through. I would say in that case, go through chanting the mantras. You do the whole thing. It could be done. But if you, yeah, that could be done. But why not bring the deities with you? Oh, they're big. Okay, then that makes a problem. So then you'd have, yeah, like a picture of them or something, and then do like that. Okay. Yeah, it's not ideal. That's why in the Vedic thing, it wouldn't so easily deities be, you know what I'm saying? For us, it's just this, basically kind of, as soon as you get to a place where deities are available, then we buy them, you know? And that, or as soon as but in the Vedic standard, one would be a little more careful if one could do, you know what I'm saying? But our lifestyle, we're traveling, we're preaching, we're doing things that generally people aren't doing so much of, you know, say, because your general populace has a house and they stay there all the time. And generally in the house, there's tons of people, right? Because you have, you know, that means not now, but previously when you came to India, 20, 30, 50 people in one house was pretty standard. You know, so there's always going to be someone there. You know, because generally the whole family doesn't go somewhere. You know, it's part of the family goes somewhere. You know, one of the brothers with his immediate family, maybe a few other cousins or this and that thrown in, goes somewhere. So there's always someone there. So you didn't have these problems. So where you have the thing where and generally in the Vedic thing is the family would only split up and not be a joint family if the considerations are the spirituality of if we're one joint family, we'll do one yajna. But if all the brothers have their own home, then there's five brothers and there'll be five yajnas. Right? So instead of getting one-fifth of the benefit, you'll get the full benefit. So there is a consideration in the Vedic that you don't live as a joint family if the consideration is increasing of the spiritual benefit. You can do that. Right? So that doesn't afford any, how do you say, justification of the Western, you know, micro-nuclear family because they can't live together. Does that make sense? You know, but it means that then you'll get the full benefit because you're not sharing with anybody else. So you get that along with the element of the preaching and traveling and all that aspect, which is going to be even a smaller, you know what they call it? Demographic of the society. Right? So, therefore, you know, these problems come up for us, but they don't come up for other practitioners of the Vedic culture because they fall into a more general category. You know? So then these considerations have to be made, but it has to be clearly seen what it is that's going on. So then the deities would have to be put in a very nice situation, you know, resting in that, but, you know, nicely arranged. And then, you know, worship and do proper worship every day is a Manasa Puja. Then it could be done. But for many, it's just they do Manasa Puja. It's not that they do a very serious Manasa Puja. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if it's a matter of you're trying to do the worship but you don't have the facilities, that's one thing. If it's a matter of it's just a convenience, then does that make sense? So if one can make distinguish between those two, then it becomes good. Does that make sense?
Difference lays down between bhajan and manasa puja.
Bhajan and manasa puja. I mean, grammatically, it would be one's one word, one's two, one starts with B, one starts with M. What do you mean? Means in the context of this question, we haven't discussed any bhajan. Bhajan was in previous chapters. So now we're just talking deity worship, and so manasa puja is part of that puja. You want to do deity worship, so you can add it to the deity worship you're already doing, or you want to do deity worship but don't have the facility, so then you do it through the medium of manasa puja. Okay? Bhajan means you're complete what you're doing in the way of sadhana to advance in spiritual consciousness. So bhajan is your whole day. puja is the part that's done according to pancharatrik rules in connection with the deity. Right? It also has a thing, goes through the day, but then it becomes part of your bhajan. Does that make sense? Okay. 8 kinds of deities are mentioned in the Shastra, and the mental deity is one of them. In this regard, the following description is given in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Right? So 8 kinds of deities. So it's just as much a deity as the archa. Right? So many would probably do well to start off with the Manasa Puja, and then if they could maintain that, then get deities. Right? But then they'll get deities, then go to Manasa Puja, and then it just drops off, you know, like that. In the city of Pratishtanapura, long ago, there resided a Brahmin who was poverty-stricken, but innocent and not dissatisfied. Right? So innocent means, yeah, he didn't have any. So the romantic elements of, you know, that you can advance, you can do things, you know, that you can still prosper in the world despite his poverty hadn't been lost. Right? Yeah, not dissatisfied. He didn't feel bad that he didn't have anything. Right? So that's the difference between the Brahmin who's living very simply and the Shudra who's living very simply. Is the Brahmin is innocent and not dissatisfied, while the Shudra, it's not necessarily the very innocent, nor are they satisfied. I'm saying if they are, then they'll advance nicely also, but the tendency is. One day he heard a discourse in an assembly of brahmanas concerning how to worship the deity in the temple. In that meeting, he also heard that the deity may be worshipped within the mind. After this incident, the brahmana, having bathed in the Godavari River, began mentally worshipping the deity. He would wash the deity. Oh, he would wash the temple within his mind. Where was deity? Wow, that's getting too far apart to pull. Okay. He would wash the temple within his mind. And then in his imagination, he would bring water from all the sacred rivers in golden and silver pots. He collected all kinds of valuable paraphernalia for worship, and he worshipped the deity very gorgeously, beginning from bathing the temple and ending with offering artik. Thus he felt great happiness. Right, so in here, he's not just doing only the ija. He's doing also, because he took his bath and everything, so the upadana, I mean, how do you say? Abhigamana is already done, the approach to the temple. But he does all the upadana, collecting the paraphernalia. Right? So if you do the Manasa Puja, then you can do all kinds of amazing things. Go to each river, what pots you have them in, everything like that. Bali also used to do this, but not Manasa, right? But he'd just jump. He'd go from, you know, one ocean, and then one jump, he'd be at the other ocean, do his first, then one jump to the next ocean, like this. So I think while he was doing this, Ravana came along and wanted to start a conversation or something. So he just wrapped him up in his tail while he was doing the puja, and then with him was jumping to all these places. So Ravana was quite impressed like that. So if one doesn't have that kind of ability, right, some kind of mystic powers, then through the mind, then one can go to all these, you know, you don't have to, you know, catch a plane and go through security and all these kind of things, right? You just have to be there and collect the water and then the next place and collect like that. After many years had passed in this way, one day within his mind he cooked nice sweet rice with ghee to worship the deity. He placed the sweet rice on a golden dish and offered it to Lord Krishna. But he felt that the sweet rice was very hot, and therefore he touched it with his finger. He immediately felt that his finger had been burnt by the hot sweet rice, and thus he began to lament. While the Brahmin was in pain, Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha began smiling, and the goddess of fortune inquired from the Lord why he was smiling. Lord Vishnu then ordered his associates to bring the Brahmin to Vaikuntha. Thus the Brahmin attained the liberation of Samipya, the facility of living near the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it works. It's good. So this is one of the deities. That's why the point is if so much benefit comes from the Manasa Puja, you know, that you get from doing the Archa Puja, so you'd also get from the picture puja, right? Or the pot puja, or, you know, all these different kinds of deities. The point is it's the degree of absorption that makes for the quality. Because you can be worshipping the Archa and not, still be thinking of something else. Does that make sense? You know, you're doing the puja and then just remember that, you know, somehow or another by today is, you know, the anniversary, and so therefore then, you know, what are you going to do, and this and that, and oh my God, you know, and that's a little, you know. So you could be doing that while you're doing your puja. You understand? So that's the Manasa Puja means you can't do that. You can't do Manasa Puja and think of anything else. That's the one advantage. Disadvantage is that unless the mind is able to be focused enough, you know, that purity, one then may not end up with any Manasa Puja. Right? So therefore the external puja is advantageous because at least the body's doing it. You know, and because we're bodily conscious, occasionally we might notice what the body's doing and then remember the deity. Right? Does that make sense? So in this way, the body becomes guru, right? You know, and reminds us of the Lord. Does that make sense? Yes.
When you are engaged in worshipping the deity, or simultaneously doing some other direct devotional service like kirtan, then sometimes I'm wondering where the focus should be, because the deity is in front, Krishna is also inside, he is also as the holy name.
You could be lying in bed and doing all this.
Who?
The others.
And so we're surrounded by Krishna, and where the focus should be?
We're surrounded by Krishna, where the focus should be, on Krishna. So what is, if you think about it, okay, what is the main thing happening at that time?
I would guess kirtan.
You would guess kirtan. So do you require a deity to have kirtan?
It's nice to sing for him.
It's nice, but do you require? No. But in the deity worship, do you require chanting?
Yes.
So the reason that you are chanting then, instead of, you know, sitting in a corner somewhere eating some halava or calling someone on the phone or doing some email, is because the artik is going on. Right? So if the artik wasn't going on, it's not guaranteed you would be doing kirtan. Right? So therefore, the worship of the deity is the main, and you're as part of that, you're chanting, you're doing kirtan. But if you get so absorbed in the kirtan, you forget the deity, then technically there's not really any loss, but it's still, since the Lord and the holy name and the deity are all the same, then it's kind of good you can connect them. Does that make sense? Yes, I wouldn't.
And also when we sing kirtan and are absorbed in kirtan, we can try to think that the niceness or the quality of kirtan is also Krishna. If we are like
yeah, like that. But still, directly the name is there. Yeah, but then saying you have both. Okay. Six, Vandana. Although prayers are a part of deity worship, they may be considered separately like the other items, right? Because most of these, there's a consecutive practice of these, but at the same time as they can have their own specific emphasis. Right? Someone could be not doing deity worship and within the deity worship offering prayers. But he could offer prayers as part of his own service. Like that. But it naturally comes from deity worship. So therefore, deity worship, now this comes, right? So the pot is saving and then the bandhanam. The archanam, now the bandhanam. Right? And therefore, separate statements are given herewith. The Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences. And one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities in various activities offers prayers to the Lord. In this way, he becomes successful. In this connection, the following are some of the offenses to be avoided. In other words, if bandhanam is something that you want to practice as a prominent element of your service, of your sadhana, then these offenses have to be avoided. Otherwise, you don't get that proper benefit from the bandhanam. One, A, to offer obeisances on one hand, because prayers, you know, obeisances, they're all part of that submission to the Lord. So, in other words, your obeisances should be very proper, because then one-handed or without saying the mantras or, you know, like these kind of things. B, to offer obeisances with one's body covered, right? So, in other words, the upper part of the body is the chadar has to be, you know, on the shoulder, best is around the waist. That's why you see in South India, or in Vaikuntha rulings, then they're going to always have the chadar around their waist when they're doing the deity worship. That's the reason, because of this rule. Right? Because you're constantly going to be offering prayers and everything like that. Yes? It's the mood of servant, of submission. If the upper part of the body is not covered, then it's a mood of submission. Like that. So that's the principle. Is that... yes?
Okay.
No hands. Both hands or no hands? So the problem is only one hand. I would say no hands would be more of a problem than one hand. So in other words, obeisances include the hands. Because when you have the panchanga pranam, it means, you know, the knees, the hands, and the head. So you get five. Otherwise, then you only end up with three. And it, some people can do it without the knees. You know, they're flexible enough. So then the head and their bum. You know, so I'm not sure how they would calculate that. But the two, yeah, but dwi anga pranam, right? You know, like that. Is that? Because also, see, when you, it's also a ruling somewhere else that when you're offering respects to somebody, you don't do it with one hand. You know, it's when you, like you offer pranam, it's always two hands, right? I mean, it's Buddhists do one hand, of course, but and it's two hands. I'm not sure why they picked one, because it's just to be different or something, I don't know. So it's always two hands. So the obeisances is also therefore two hands. You know? You know what I'm saying? So generally is what are those things? What are they for?
They might
be crafted. Yeah, so generally if it's for the deity, if you're carrying something for the deity it's going to be offered, you don't offer obeisances then. Right? If you're carrying boga, you don't offer obeisances. You put it down. So in other words, if it's a proper place to put it down, like you walk into the deity room, you don't offer obeisances and get up and then put it, you come up, put it onto the altar and all that, then these kind of things can be done. You know, or if you're carrying paraphernalia in the temple room and there's, you know, somebody or of the deities or Vaishnavas that offer obeisances, you don't at that time because you're carrying paraphernalia, so you're counted as paraphernalia. Right? Because the paraphernalia shouldn't touch the ground. You're carrying flowers, you're carrying plates, they don't touch the ground. So unless you have a nice clean place to put them, which generally there isn't. Like if you're there, there's that altar and the stage in the front, you could put it there and offer obeisances, but you wouldn't put it on the floor or on the steps in the back or, you know, stuff like that. Yes? It's not so important because then the consideration is your hands are clean, but then you're doing achman and other things, so it's a subtler form of cleanliness. So if you're carrying paraphernalia for the deity and touch the hands to the ground, technically then you have to do karshudi again. You have to wash the hands again. Right? So the idea is that you're doing something for the deity, so it's not a matter of you're going to miss out on something because you're paraphernalia. Paraphernalia doesn't have that problem.
But when you put it down, now you're not doing that service. Now you can offer a bit. So you could carry the plate. You had to walk through the temple. You put it down, whatever it is, and then you come back out and offer obeisances to, you know, the deities or whatever. That could be done. Right? Yes.
Well, I've seen people who are holding their bait bags and then carry their obeisances and then like that. Is
there bait bags in there? You can. I'm saying these are... They're okay. But it's not like it's great. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you want to go to Calcutta means you could do it in one of the local ambassadors here. You know, it works. You know? But, you know, the window doesn't roll up and, you know, all these different things like that. And he has to, you know, stop every 2 hours and open the lid, you know, the bonnet or... that because it overheats and, you know, and stuff like that. You'll get there. But it's not as good as if you had something that would more resemble the car.
Excuse me, can't hear the question.
I don't have it in my hands, so therefore it's not a problem. In the temple, it's not in my hands. I carry it, but it's not in my hands, so therefore... Depends. It may be around the neck, it may not be around the neck. Okay, so we'll move on from there. Yes?
Are you describing the physical aspects of paying obeisances? Where should the line be?
Thinking of the deity, or thinking of the whoever you're offering obeisances to, because part, if you're getting more technical about puja, what makes the astang pranam is the mind. So you understand that's part of it. So the full obeisances means that 2 feet. I think 2 feet. What is it? 2 feet, hands, head.
In panchanga, this is feet and mind are counted as 2 elements. Head is third, mind is fourth, and maybe intelligence is fifth or something.
No, that's in astanga. That's in eight limbs. Five just means the knees are on the ground, your hands are on the ground, and the head's on the ground. Because that anybody can do. Does that make sense? You know, and that can be used in any situation. Well, the astang, you don't necessarily always have that option. Facility or the time. You know, if you're out in a crowd of people and you see the deity, you don't necessarily have the option of, you know, eight limbs. Because that takes, you know, more focus, more space. So, you know, if you're worried about someone stepping on you, then the mind isn't involved. You know, you stick your hands out there, someone steps on them. You know, so it's not... That makes sense. Yes?
To make a difference, any basis to the fact that that's the end of the release and the end?
If it's 5 or 8, it doesn't matter. It's just what's appropriate for the situation. Okay. C, to show one's back to the deity. Right? So you be very careful about that. D, to offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. So, yeah. So the left side means the deity's left. One should always be on the deity's right. So that's why you see some devotees, let's say, during the Artik, they're on that left side. But when they offer obeisances, they turn so that their left side is to the deity when they offer obeisances. But generally you would be on the right. So someone who's by prayers, because prayers are always offered from the deity's right. Yes?
Why should Prabhupada's Vyasasam be built in temples so that it's facing the deities, so that when there's the Darshanarthi is going on, and then you have the box of Prabhupada, and then whenever Prabhupada's scruples is going on, then you have the box of the deities.
It's not practical because people somehow or another have lost the science of standing sideways. You know, it's a very technical, very deep practice. Because before they were conscious of both Prabhupada and the deity, so they wouldn't turn their back. But now they're at best conscious of one. You know. Like that. Otherwise, that's why some of these different elements come up, is that during Prabhupada's Guru Puja, they don't offer the prayers and they just walk off. But if you're doing Guru Puja, you have to conclude Guru Puja and then go back to sing for the deities. But if they say, oh, it breaks the flow, then sing for the deities. And when you're finished, then do Guru Puja and finish that. You know what I'm saying? But these are because of not understanding that you're not supposed to do stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Popular. I mean, every temple does it. But it has nothing to do with how it was introduced or what the Shastra says. It's just these are more of the made up. You know, it's just like you're leading kirtan, and while you're singing, they stick the flower in your nose, right? Because you're supposed to be able to chant and breathe in at the same time, right? And some of them will even touch it to your head first and then stick it in your nose. Because they read Nectar Devotion, you touch the head first. But that's what you do, not what someone else does for you. If it's your kid, you do it. Because they don't know that. You know.
Whenever the group is going on,
means whether the deity is going on or the Guru Puja, you'd be facing the same direction. So it doesn't matter.
Are the curtains supposed to be closed? Because is it the Govinda prayers?
Govinda, yeah.
The curtains open, Govinda prayers, so all of the sun deities.
Right.
And sometimes then the group, after that, then Charamita, then the Guru Puja starts. And so then with the curtains open, then all the bhaks go to the deities.
Well, that's because they don't know how to stand.
And then the Guru Puja starts. So are the curtains, are they supposed to close whenever the...
No, it's supposed, people are supposed to stand properly.
Okay.
That's all. Does that make sense?
Yeah. How Guru Puja should be concluded?
With the primitive one.
And then kirtan again started.
Can, if you want. Yeah, because Prabhupada would be there for the Guru Puja. You end the Guru Puja, and then after the Guru Puja, then he'd get up. You know, or start class. So when he'd move, then they'd start kirtan again. But this thing is, well, we're going to do kirtan again, so we'll remove this. But it's pragmatism. It's not a scientific process. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Not convinced
of what?
If we are worshipping more deities like Prabhupada,
right,
then we also should come to the Guru Buddha by Prabhupada Vani if we are.
Yes.
Sometimes what happens then is the conch blows for the end of the Guru Puja, and then the Prabhupada's pranams mantra is said, and the Kansapati mantra is said once by the singer, and then during the repetition, then he starts to walk.
That's what I'm saying. Devotees have created this ritual, but it's not the system. They want to sing for the deity, take more darshan. Do that before. You had darshan for the deity. So what's this? Punar darshan? You know, why? It means, like in Panchatattva, you have darshan, you sing. And then that's over. Then you move to the next item. So they want to do that, sing a song, then go down and start Guru Puja. And when Guru Puja is finished, then that ends. Not that you leave and then... You know, it's very simple, straightforward stuff. But we're just looking at practicalness. But you have to remember is that this practicalness comes from the modes of passion, ignorance. It's not practical from the mode of goodness. Western pragmatism is never the mode of goodness. You know, occasionally it is. If the guy's, you know, 60 years old, maybe it's, you know, some goodness. You know. Yes. No, no, just one, then he's counted like the deity. That's all. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what we just discussed. Stand sideways.
In the smaller temples, like in Australia, you notice with the parusa at the front and the madhijanga at the back, and because the temple is so much smaller, when it's your turn to be near Prabhupada, depending on which RIT is going on, everyone gets really good at not standing with their back to Prabhupada or to the deities. Just because, I think it's because Prabhupada's so close to you, it's in your mind that he's right there. And when you visit those temples, you see everyone is standing on their side.
Mm-hmm.
So it, whether you're at the front or the back, maybe it's just that you're more conscious.
Yeah.
You might be that the training is different. And here, you know, you're quite far away from the deities from Prabhupada's group. Mm-hmm. But you do see people standing sideways,
yeah.
When class is going on, no one's sitting straight, everyone's sort of,
yeah.
You know, angled.
Yeah.
You can see everything that's
going on. Yeah. I mean, that's just standard. Before, everybody did that. So just with time, slowly, slowly disappears. Either they don't know or, you know, some other consideration. But like you said, the small temples is very obvious because, I mean, the distance between the deities and Prabhupada's like that far, a little bit more, so it's kind of, you know. Okay. To offer obeisances very near the deity, right? Because it's bandhanam, so it's official, so you have to have the proper distance. You know, what you can, you know, properly focus on the deity. Because if it's too near, how do you focus on the whole deity? You know, by here you don't have to worry about too near because you already have this to hand to stay. Because in Pancharatrik temples, generally you have the, like in the Sringa days, it's like that. You have the deity room and then you have the Ardha Mandap, which is a enclosed room within that's connected that you can do different special things within, like that. So you always have distance. Seven, Dasyam. There's the following statement in regard to assisting the Lord as a servant. After many, many thousands of births, when one comes to understand that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, one can deliver others from this universe. If one simply continues to think that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, even without performing any other process of devotional service, he can attain full success. For simply by this feeling, one can perform all nine processes of devotional service. So if you think, I'm servant, that's what... So naturally, when these other elements come up, you'll be doing them. But the central core of it is, I'm servant. Right? So if you're always remembering, I'm servant, you also don't get distracted by other things. Right? Because generally, it's when we think, I'm the Lord and Master of the universe. That's when problems come up, right? But if we're thinking, I am servant, generally, you know, much less problems like that. So just by focusing on that one thing, then one will naturally be engaged in all the other nine processes and one will avoid materialistic endeavor. Sakyam. In regard to worship, Rupa Goswami makes the point this dasyam, that this doesn't include varnashram. Right? Means varnashram will be successfully connected to the Lord by seeing yourself as a servant. So therefore, some sampradayas count varnashram as part of dasyam. But Rupa Goswami for us doesn't. Doesn't mean it's not followed, but it's followed as just part of the social etiquette of how Vaishnavs in a group will interact with each other. Right? Does that make sense? So it doesn't become like part of the sadhana. Like in others, for many groups, it's part of the sadhana. Like that.
8, Sakyam. In regard to worshipping the Lord as a friend, the Augusta Samhita states that a devotee engaged in performing devotional service like Shravanam and Kirtanam sometimes wants to see the Lord personally. And for this purpose, he resides in the temple. Elsewhere, there is the statement, O my Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, an eternal friend, although you are full of bliss and knowledge, you have become the friend of the residents of Vrindavan. How fortunate are these devotees? In this statement, the word friend is especially used to indicate intense love. Friendship, therefore, is better than servitude. In this stage above Dasya Ras, the devotee accepts the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a friend. This is not at all astonishing, for when a devotee is pure in heart, the opulence of his worship of the deity diminishes as spontaneous love for the Personality of Godhead is manifested. In this regard, Sridhar Swami mentions Sridham Vipra, who expressed to himself his feelings of obligation, thinking, life after life, may I be connected with Krishna in this friendly attitude. Right. So this doesn't mean, you're standing up there and, when no one's looking, you're standing, you've got the hand on the shoulder, hey, check it out, like that kind of stuff. No, Balaram does that, we don't do that. So here then, it's meaning that mood is, that servitorship, that means Sakyam will include servitorship, but that's not where the focus. So the opulence, the rules aren't the prominent. It's just that friendly attitude towards the Lord becomes more prominent. Doesn't mean opulence gets less, that now the person with facilities, now he's on the spontaneous platform, so he offers less opulence to the Lord. No, it's just, it's less important in his mind. That's why it says it would be less. Right? The opulence of his deity, worship of the deity diminishes as spontaneous love for the personality is manifest. That doesn't mean that the facility is less. But that being as what's prominent in the mind, that the opulence of the Lord, he's God and the opulence is there. Here now it's just that's the standard, right? Wouldn't you offer the best to your friend? Because if they're a close friend, you'd give them the best. But it's not opulence, it's just the nicest thing. Right? While if it's servitude, it's a matter of they're superior, therefore they get the best. Right? So opulence becomes part of that. The other one is just, you know what I'm saying? It's a different mood. So here. Atmanivedanam. Also, it's considered the person who's preaching, because the Lord wants to see all living entities uplifted. So the preacher is also counted as the sakyam. That's also an attitude. So here, you want to, the person is absorbed in hearing and chanting, so he wants to be near the Lord because of that feeling of friendship. So therefore, he's at the temple. Right? Or, in his worship becomes more spontaneous. Or, because the Lord desires it, therefore he goes out and preaches. Right? So these are all symptoms of friendship. Right? And 9, Atmanivedanam. The word Atmanivedanam refers to the stage at which one has no motive other than to serve the Lord. Then to serve the Lord, surrenders everything to the Lord, and performs his activities only to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so no motive other than to serve the Lord. So there's nothing to gain oneself. So it's purely, the Naishkarmya is established. Everything has been surrendered to the Lord. So it's not that there's any aspect of the conditioned nature that is the consideration. And performs his activities only to please the Lord. So he sees himself and everything in connection with the Lord. He sees the results in connection with the Lord. He sees the activities in connection with the Lord. So therefore, that's full surrender. Right? Because in others, there might be one part of that you see in connection. Like servant, dasyam, I see myself as servant. So that's the sambandha. Right? But here, sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana are completely seen in connection with the Lord. Right? Such a devotee is like a cow that is cared for by its master. When cared for by its master, a cow is not in anxiety over its maintenance. Such a cow is always devoted to its master and never acts independently, but only for the master's benefit. Some devotees therefore consider dedication of the body to the Lord to be Atmanivedanam. And as stated in the book known as Bhakti Vivek, sometimes dedication of the soul to the Lord is called Atmanivedanam. The best examples of Atmanivedanam are found in Bali Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj. Atmanivedanam is also sometimes found in the behavior of Rukmini Devi at Dwarka. So
one is not worried about one's maintenance, one's facility, because it's just you're just worried about serving the Lord. So it's just it means like the cow is being taken care of; it doesn't have to worry about things. Right? Everything happens in a regulated fashion. Things there, so you don't worry. You just perform your service. So the body being fully engaged, but for the body to be fully engaged, we remember is that the mind is the charioteer. It's controlling the body and the senses. So therefore you could say, if the body's engaged, therefore it's Atmanivedanam. If you say if the soul's engaged, that means consciousness. If consciousness is there, then body, mind, and words will be engaged also. So either works. They're both. It's just a matter of which you're looking at. One you're taking is consciousness, and one you're taking that the person's, all his activities and everything will be absorbed. That makes sense? But they'll both end up, they'll look the same. It's just which perspective you started from. They both were. And sometimes found, so Bali Maharaj Ambarish, that's always there with Rukmini, it's sometimes found because being the wife, then you have all these other flavors that are involved like that. So then sometimes there may be acting in a way that the flavors will be different. So you may not see that aspect. Though it's there, but you won't see it manifest. But with Ambarish and Bali Maharaj, you'll see it always manifest. Does that make sense? Okay. So B, excerpts from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sri Hari Bhakti Kalpa Latika.
These last three are practiced after
Vishta,
or
these last three? No,
they
can be.
Because sometimes they are like qualified.
You could say Dasyam is more the neophyte, Shakyam, the Madhyam, and Atmanivedanam, your Uta. Right? Because the point is that everything's completely surrendered. It means it's not that that's your desire, it means that's what you're actually doing. Does that make sense? So if that happens, then that will mean one's not conditioned. Right? But that friendship is that one can have that element, that surrender, but it's still not on the same level as the Atmanivedanam. So that's Sakya, so that'll be your Madhyam. And then Dasyam, then that can be. You know what I'm saying? That's general. Though you do have, like in the Lord's pastimes, you have like Kashi Mishra. Now they'll be classified as neophyte pure devotees or third class pure devotees because if someone comes and starts talking all kinds of shastra against the Lord in devotional service, shastric wise they won't know what to say. Right? Is that they're eternal associates. They don't need technically to know all that. So they wouldn't know what to say, but they're third class pure devotees. So they'll be on the platform of Atmanivedanam. But, So, except for those kind of exceptions, then generally it runs like that. But one could also be Madhyam and be Dasyam. One could be Atmanivedanam, still have that element of Dasyam. Right? If it was a Vaikuntha worshiper, Dasyam will always be there.
We are speaking about bandhana, that means only prayers which are already written in the books or our prayers?
Whether the prayers are written in the books or our prayers, it's mentioned that both should be offered. Because if you only offer your prayers, then sometimes with time you miss out elements that are very important in that surrender. So when you recite others' prayers, then you see what is their mood and follow in that. But if you only recite others' prayers, then you may not technically apply it in your life.
So to understand or express one's realization, therefore one offers one's own prayers. So that's why it's sometimes said the stava and stuti. Right? So some define stava and stuti meaning Vedic prayers and then classical, you know, Sanskrit prayers. That both are written, I mean, one is Veda and one is written by great personalities. And others will say that one means those written from the Shastra and written by great personalities, or and then your own prayers. But basically, both are supposed to be there. So these prayers of others can be from the Acharyas, from the Shastras, from like this.
Invocation on the glory of devotional service. I offer my humble obeisances unto that blackish, blissful personality who resembles the new clouds. In spite of being self-satisfied, he mercifully appeared in this world in the land of Braja to enjoy his pastimes with the gopis and other devotees while pretending to be an expert killer of demons. Let us worship that blissful personality who constantly gives pleasure to the hearts of the gopis. Devotional service to him can transform this temporary material world into the eternal abode of the Lord. So then we're giving is that what's attractive is means he himself is very attractive, right? So he's the element of Madan Mohan. He's self-satisfied, right? So that's still that same situation. We're attracted, but he himself is self-satisfied. But he mercifully appears and performs pastimes so that so that there is interaction with the devotees and we can become attracted. Right? So like I was saying before, the reason for creation is the Lord's mercy. Right? So that's the cause of ultimately the cause of everything is his mercy. Right? He appeared in the land of Braja, so he comes with his internal potency. He enjoys his pastimes with his eternal associates. Right? While pretending to be an expert killer of demons, because that's not actually, he's only doing it to impress the devotees, you know. It's impressive, you know, you're there, forest fire starts, you suck it all in, you know. It's impressive, you know, a bull walks in the size of, you know, the Empire State Building and you pick it up and kill it, you know, then it's impressive, these things, you know. So it's fun for him and the devotees, right? But at the same time, is because of being self-satisfied in his mercy, then it removes the anarthas from the heart. Right? So that element comes up. Yes?
What is the meaning of the book Hari Bhakti Kalpa Latika?
Hari Bhakti Kalpa Latika. I think something to do with the creeper of Hari Bhakti. Like that. So he's discussing the devotional creeper. Desire creeper, yeah, kalpa, yeah. The desire creeper of Hari Bhakti. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we let us worship him who gives pleasure to the hearts of the gopis. Right, so then here you brought in now your Abhideya, now the Prayojana. Right, so you've gone through the Sambandha, you know, Madan Mohan. You know, with he's self-satisfied, you know, what he looks like. He mercifully comes to enjoy the pastime. And then, Abhideya, he enjoys the pastimes for pretending to be a killer. Let us worship that Supreme Personality, so that worship means that we'll perform the rules and regulations according to Sambandha. But the element who constantly gives pleasure to the hearts of the gopis, now Gopinath, right? And then devotional can transform the temporary material world into the eternal abode of the Lord. That it's still only one energy. So therefore, according to how we relate to the Lord and His energy, then it manifests to us as spiritual or material. The treasury of devotional service to Lord Hari contains the following. Pure fruits, which are only one's desire to achieve the goal of life. Precious jewels, which are the Vedic literatures. The root of a tree, which is spiritual knowledge. The current of the ocean, which is spiritual bliss. a bridge, which is the means of crossing the ocean of material existence, and stairs, which are the way to the kingdom of immortality. Therefore, who in this world would not pray for the rare supreme treasury of devotional service to Lord Hari? So here it seems that the kalpa may also be taken as treasure, right? Because the kalpa vriksha means that all treasures are there, whatever you want you can get, but the indication of all treasures being there as opposed to what you're getting, you know. So, two. The devotees of the Lord, the nine processes of devotional service executed by the devotees, the definition of devotional service, and the symptoms of uncontaminated devotional service and love of Krishna. So you have a general definition, and then you have the very specific details, so you can tell. In other words, devotional service is a general category. Then you have the explanation that you can tell the difference between pure devotional service and mixed. Right? Just like you have the definition of the living entity, then you have the definition of find the liberated soul, and then the conditioned. Right? So you always have the generic, and then the specifics. Devotional service to the Lord is obtained only by the mercy of the devotees. The offer offers prayers to them. Because we only get it by devotees. You know, that's why it's important that we learn to respect devotees, not criticize devotees, because our getting love of God depends upon devotees. Krishna will award it, but unless the devotees say we should get it, it's not going to happen. It's that simple. It's not that we can just approach Krishna directly and work it all out. We got our own arrangement. No, it doesn't work like that. I worship those devotees who are devoid of the desire for liberation, who are engaged in welfare activities for the whole world, and who are empowered incarnations of the Supreme Lord, and who are attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Hari, the proprietor of all the universes, leaves his own abode and constantly resides with his devotees, being controlled by their love. Right, so no need for liberation. So the obstacles and difficulties of this world, they're not worried about making a permanent material solution. Activity means you have to deal with the obstacles. Right? So in other words, Sambandha Gyan is the science. You know the science of dealing with the field. But when you go to operate it, obstacles come up because the field is constantly changing. That's why you're dealing in the moment. Right? In the present, you're dealing with what the field is like right now. So that means the circumstances, the time, you know, the mood, the different elements, their relationships, your part in it, you know, like that. So as you go, every moment that changes. Right? One is the material energy is transforming because of your involvement in an activity. Right? It means the operational cause is there, so the material cause is also at work. You're working, it's also transforming. So that means that the situation is constantly changing, adjusting. Right? So that you're not worried that those adjustments are an anxiety. Right? Why? Because the activity gets the result for Krishna. But the activity generates the result means it also has to deal with the obstacles. So they go together. You want the result, you deal with the obstacles. You don't want the result, then when the obstacle comes up, you stop. Okay. So that's the thing. So therefore, those devotees devoid of a desire for liberation, right, who are engaged in welfare activities for the whole world. So they can do welfare activities, means preach, because they don't have a problem with liberation. Right? You can preach in any time, place, and circumstance if you're not worried about the obstacles. Right? So we'll stop here for today. Or this morning. Yeah, well, for this book for today, for the classes in general, for this part of the morning.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janitai Govardhana.